Imagine you're looking at a balancing scale with everything you do for other people on one side and everything you do for yourself on the other side. If it isn't balanced, maybe it's time to spend a little more time on you. And therapy is a great place to start. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online who can help you find that balance and stick to it. Visit betterhelp.com/positive to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/positive.
Okay, what's the number one reason you should try Instacart? Shopping over 1.5 million unique products from over 1,000 retailers and get everything delivered right to your door in as fast as 1 hour, all in one app. So you can spend more time with the ones who matter most. Visit instacart.com to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm a little jealous of the clean air, the clear blue skies that I'm seeing in other places. Not in the Northeast, definitely not in the New York City area. Not sure if you know, but there were games that were canceled because of the smoke and the air quality being among the worst, some of the worst it's been in decades and decades in the New York area. So the Yankees game was canceled. Mets are in Atlanta, but the Yankees game was canceled. And also the smoke got inside Barclays Center, somehow was able to get inside the arena. And they decided, because the air quality was not clear, that they would cancel the WNBA game that was supposed to be hosted by the Liberty on Wednesday evening. So events being canceled, schools canceled, outdoor activities, especially as it pertains to kiddos, those getting canceled as well. And the air quality still pretty rough. I actually heard one report on the Weather Channel that it's supposed to get worse on Thursday morning before it starts to get better. If you are in one of those places where the air quality is suffering from the Canadian wildfires and the smoke that's descending into the U.S., please be careful. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Miami, not so worried about their air quality, but definitely worried about their two teams. The Florida Panthers now trailing in the Stanley Cup Final 0-2. Miami Heat, well, they're down 2-1 against the Denver Nuggets, and they've lost that home court advantage. Really a dominant performance by Denver on Wednesday night. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. You can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page. And right now we are pleased to welcome Jose Pineda, who joins us from South Florida. He is the longtime Spanish play-by-play voice of Miami Heat Radio. Jose, we have seen the Heat thrive in these comebacks where they're down double figures even to start the fourth quarter. In game two in Denver, they were able to come all the way back, steal that victory, snatch it from the jaws of defeat, but not in game number three. So what was the difference between these two fourth quarters, Jose?
I think when you start the last quarter already down, again, it was all Denver tonight, really. Miami never led after the second quarter, late second quarter, and it was 44-42 with 3:18 left. And then at the half, Miami was down five, and basically that was it. Miami did not win a quarter in game three. They tied the first quarter. They were down five in the second. They were down nine in the third, and they were down one in the fourth. And it seemed that they never got going. And Denver was terrific. They were just terrific, and the combination of Jokic and Murray were just outstanding. Both of them obviously with triple doubles. I think that's the first time ever in the history of the finals that happens. And they were just terrific. And Miami just couldn't find their offense tonight. 37% field goal percentage. That was the second worst this year. Although Miami had six more three-pointers and took actually 12 more shots tonight than Denver. They just couldn't hit. They took 12 more shots and made seven less shots than Denver tonight. And again, with 37%, very, very difficult to win that way.
Jokic and Murray with the triple doubles, and the Heat have had varying degrees of effectiveness in their defense when they're able to limit Jokic a little bit. What's the best strategy for guarding him?
Well, I mean, I don't think that it's that easy to do. I mean, Obviously, in the last game, he scored 41 points, but only had 4 assists. You know, in the first game, I should say, a triple-double and 14 assists and 10 rebounds in that triple-double. And tonight, you know, he had, again, 10 assists. So he just is a surgeon. And you got to pick your poison with him. But I think that the pick and roll tonight between those two was one of the best I've ever seen in any game, and certainly this year and in the finals this year, these three games. I mean, they were just on par with everything that they did. Pick and roll, pick and pop, the short shots by Jokic, the three-pointers made also by Murray tonight. He had 2 3-pointers at one point that were really, really tough shots. So they were just phenomenal. They were just phenomenal, and Miami didn't have an answer for them tonight. And again, when you don't score, very, very difficult on one side to defend. You're not defending very well on one side and not scoring on the other. That's a recipe for a disaster.
3 Miami Heat in double figures. That's it. So as you talk about the offense wasn't real consistent tonight, did you see anything that stood out to you?
I just thought that the more aggressive team was Denver. And even the players that scored in double figures for Miami, they were all under 50%. You know, Bam was not really efficient in terms of scoring. Yeah, he had 22 points and tied his playoff high this year with 17 rebounds and a great double-double. But he took 21 shots and only made 7. Again, he missed, you know, 14 shots. That's not good, Amy. That's not good percentages. Jimmy Butler under 50% as well. Caleb Martin, who had the 10 points, you know, 4 of 9. So, again, when you score 37%, 31% in three-point shooting, that's not going to cut it. And what's interesting is Miami only had 4 turnovers, only 4 turnovers, while Denver had 14 and cost them 17 points. The 4 turnovers cost Miami only 8. It's like the second fewest turnovers in finals history. But still, that didn't matter because the Denver Nuggets were so efficient tonight in their scoring, and especially 2-point shots. I mean, they only made 5 3-pointers in 18 attempts, you know, a really not great percentage 3-point-wise. But Jokic in the paint, again, the paint points as well, 60 yes. to 34. That was a plus 26. Second chance points, 14 to 7. And in fast breaks, it was even at 11. But again, the points in the paint was just, they pummeled us. And that's what even Spo said after the game.
Jose Pineda is the Spanish voice play-by-play for the Miami Heat. Been doing it for 30-plus years, so this is his 7th NBA Finals with the team. We're so excited to have him on the show for the first time. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Miami's story is amazing, trying to become the first 8 seed ever to win a championship. And I love how Jimmy Butler said that they're resilient because of the I don't give a damn factor, meaning they don't care what people think, they don't care what people say. What stands out to you about the character of this Heat crew?
Miami was 2nd in the league this year in clutch games as defined by the NBA. 54, only Dallas had one more, 55. Miami was 32-22. They've been in 10 clutch games in these playoffs, 7-3. And again, it was so many ups and downs this year by the team. And to finish in 8th spot, the Heat's playoff run started a month before the season really ended to try to get into that 6th spot. You don't want to be into the play-in game. And then here you finish the season and you got to play Atlanta in the first game of the play-in, and you lose that game. And you go, wow. And then you're down 7, or you're down 6 actually, with 7 minutes left on April 14th in the second play-in game on that Friday night at home against Chicago. You're down 6 with 7 minutes left. They're down 3. With 3 minutes left, they get there. Oh, and now you got to face, you know, the team with the best record in the NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks, and Antetokounmpo. And you beat them in 5. And then, you know, you play the Knicks and their defense, and you beat them in 6. And oh, but you now got to play, you know, the Celtics, and you're up 3-0, and then you lose 3 in a row, and then you don't want to be the first team ever to lose after being up 3-0 in the history of the NBA. It's 150-0. And you win at Boston. So this team is no surprises, you know, obviously now down 2-1. They had not been down in a series until, you know, game 1 of this year's against Denver. So, you know, this team has been through everything. They have been the underdogs. This was game number 21 of the playoffs for the Heat. The Heat have been underdogs in Vegas in 20 of the 21 games. And in the one game that they were favored, they lost. So, again, nothing surprises me. What's crazy is people ask me, well, what do you think? What do you think? I say, I don't know. How are you going to know what to think? How are you going to know what to think when you had 54 clutch games this year? You've had 10 in the playoffs, and you've been underdog in every game except one. So, but nothing surprises me about this team and what how they can turn around. And I really believe that we have one of the greatest coaches in the history of the NBA with Eric Spoelstra, and never underestimate what he does and how he moves chips left and right.
Obviously a ton of wisdom and experience with Spoelstra. But why? Why is he such a good coach? How is it that he's able to put pieces together? And it seemingly is a group that turns over at least a little bit every year, and yet somehow he always brings them together so they're competitive.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter who you have. You know, they always said, well, but when he had the big three, you know, that was different. Well, he's done it with all types of teams and all types of level of players. And this year is no exception. You know, we talk a lot about, Amy, the Heat culture, and I know you've heard that word before a lot.
Yes.
And really, it all stems from Pat Riley and down. And, you know, being committed, being, you know, determined, hard work, nonstop. He's got a great staff. And really to have so many people around you, including Pat Riley, that you can rely on. And I really think, you know, he's now also part of the Olympic team as a coach as well. He is fifth in the history of the NBA in playoff wins, and he's just two away from Doc Rivers. So, again, he just does it different ways and with different teams. And he's always very calm. I think his teams are calm as well. You don't see any really, you know, frustration. Or you may see, you know, a lot of animated parts of the game of Spoelstra on the sideline. But he faces every game the same way. That's really something so positive about him and the team and the assistant coaches as well that get these teams, the players prepared. And the players believe. And also, you know, we talk about, you know, where we are and the season and how it's been. Spoelstra doesn't like to mention this, but the team started out this year with 10 undrafted players, the most like ever. And then 7 in the playoffs, and 5 of them are playing. 2 of them are starters. So you look at that, and you put that together, and you say, how does he do it? Well, because of the system that he has and the belief that he has and he puts in to these players, and the hard work also really that these players do that you know, they follow the lead, and it all starts with Spoelstra.
How cool was it to see Udonis Haslem get into the game tonight, even if it was in a loss and just for a minute?
Yeah, it was. I think that he is the oldest ever. I saw one stat that he's the oldest ever
yes.
in the history of the playoffs to get in. But I also had seen another, maybe in the finals, but I also had seen a stat where Robert Parrish, by a year or by a few months, had also been, you know, at 43 and Haslem's 42. But that was cool. I mean, I've known him from day one. And like me, born and raised in Miami, he went to Miami High. I see his banners when I go into that building at times that we do a lot of community work there at Miami High that has such a long history of winning in our county and in Miami-Dade County in high school sports and in basketball specifically. And that he is, you know, born and raised guy here. And I wish it would have been doing a win and not a loss, but he's such a great part. And that's something else that people don't realize. They say, well, why is he taking up a spot? And you don't understand, you know, that's, again, part of the Heat culture, how he is really another assistant coach in the locker room. But it's a lot different, Amy, when you have the uniform on than when you have the uniform off. I mean, we have so many great ex-players and assistant coaches, Chris Quinn, Caron Butler, Malik Allen, Alonzo Mourning is also in the front office. Glenn Rice is also in the front office. Anthony Carter is also on the bench as well. But it's different when you are wearing that uniform, and he is so respected, not just by the players, but the coaches and the fans as well. And whatever positive stuff happens to him, I am just so happy for him. And I'm sure that he'll be part of our future as well.
Jose Pineda is with us from Miami following Game 3. Called it on Spanish language affiliate, which is what? What is the Spanish language affiliate?
98.3, Univision 98.3 Boom. FM, and you can also get it on the Heat app and Univision app as well. And my, like I said, 34th year broadcasting games home and away. And I started 35 years ago with a Heat in a different capacity in marketing and sales, and moved on, and the rest is history. And you said 7 NBA finals, 3 championship rings, trips to the White House, meeting presidents. And,
wow.
And I pinch myself every day, you know, and this is not over. And hopefully right. another trip to the White House and another championship, but it's going to take some work, as we knew it would. You know, when you get to this level, there's nothing easy. Nothing comes easy. If it would be easy, everybody have a championship trophy, and that's not how it works.
True. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. What's it like right now in South Florida with the Florida Panthers? And I know they're down, yeah. but they're also an 8 seed, which is fought and scratched to get to this point in the Stanley Cup Final. And now Messi deciding that he's going to play in Miami.
And don't forget the Marlins. They're doing pretty good.
And the Marlins.
You know, I think they were behind the Mets in second place. So, I mean, I think that's where they were. I haven't paid attention much. I mean, I know that they're winning. But it's been phenomenal. Listen, Miami is the center of the universe for a lot of things. and we are just giddy about all this. And obviously, Messi coming here after winning the World Cup and one of the greatest soccer players in the history of the sport itself. And the Panthers are doing great as well. And then, you know, so we're all excited. For fans, let me tell you, it's exhausting. And for viewers, because now almost every other night there is a game, whether it's a Heat game or a Panther game, and obviously you have the Marlins as well. And now the excitement with Messi, you know, coming over, probably coming over, obviously. And, you know, and we got the Dolphins and Tua, and they, you know, they made the playoffs last year. And we have Coach McMichaels coming into McDaniels, I'm sorry, to the games. And he's really excited as well about what's going on with the Panthers and the Dolphins. So it's and the Heat, and so it's been a great time here in sports in South Florida. I'll tell you what it's been. I know for us as broadcasters and employees, you know, and this is part of the sport is, you know, it's exhausting both physically and mentally. I mean, going down a game, and this is something we spoke about before. Talked about how does this happen, and how do the resiliency of this Heat team, you know, going up 3 against the Boston Celtics and then losing at game 6 at home, and you're like, oh my goodness, and you got to go to Boston, and everybody was there, and you got Paul Pierce in the front row, and Jason Terry, and you have Rondo, and the whole thing there, and they bring the video of the Red Sox coming back against the Yankees down 0-3 and the whole thing. And I mean, mentally, it was exhausting. And then winning that game, and then we had already planned going straight from Boston to Denver, and we show up at Denver, and we you know, it's a 4-hour flight, and we get there around 7-8 a.m. It was literally exhausting. And for the fans who are staying up and watching these games as well, definitely it's physically and mentally exhausting. But that's part of the sport, and
yes.
it's part of the highs and lows.
Well, and it's part of the toughness. The teams that
yeah.
can manage it, they're the ones that survive and advance and are still playing.
Exactly.
Great to catch up with you. You can find Jose Pineda on Twitter at Lavoz Del Heat, which is Lavozdel Heat. 34 years behind the mic for the Miami Heat. He's seen a lot. We're so glad to welcome you here to the show for the first time. I hope it's not the last time.
I thank you very much, Amy, and hopefully the next time it's a win after that. But anytime, I really appreciate it, and thank you very much.
What a track record. 34 years behind the mic. And he's casually dropping visits to the White House, championship parades, now 7 NBA finals. But I do love the wealth of knowledge. So he predates Pat Riley there in Miami, predates Eric Spoelstra and this current group of the Miami Heat, but there is a culture and it's firmly established. And we talk about all the different coaches getting hired and this carousel really applies to every sport. But right now in the NBA, a bunch of veteran coaches kind of getting recycled and starting over in new places. Well, in Miami, they have a foundation and they're sticking to it. And that's why they've now in their 7th NBA finals and why they're chasing a fourth championship ring. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Really excited to connect with you as we have been the last couple of weeks. It's been pretty busy on our social media, on our Facebook page as well. After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening.
Prepare for a righteous reckoning in the new season of the HBO original series, The Righteous Gemstones. When the spoiled gemstone children finally get their wish to take control of the church, they discover leadership is harder than they imagined and that their extravagant lifestyle comes with a heavy price. Starring Danny McBride, John Goodman, Edie Patterson, and Adam Devine. Watch the all-new season of The Righteous Gemstones, streaming June 18th on Max. Subscription required. Visit max.com for details.
T-Mobile's network can help keep you connected to all your favorite podcasts when you're out and about. Whether you're an early bird looking to dive into a daily news podcast or a night owl who wants to catch up on the latest reality TV drama, T-Mobile will keep you connected on their strong and reliable network. T-Mobile covers more highway miles with 5G than anyone. So if you need great coverage, especially when you're on the go, check out T-Mobile. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/CY. That's SEEWHY.
Your points are worth more than you think. This first-class flight to Tokyo, you can book it in your credit card portal for 1.4 million points. Yowzers. With PointMe, you could redeem just 120,000 points for that same flight. Now that's more like it. PointMe gets you 6 to 12 times the value for your points. Your credit card points are worth more than you think. PointMe. Better flights. Fewer points.
Get started today at point.me. That's point.me.
The After Hours Podcast.
I would describe the meeting as intense, certainly heated. This is a very complex, obviously it's been a very dynamic and a complex couple of years. And for players, I'm not surprised that, you know, this is an awful lot to ask them to digest. And this is a significant change for us, you know, in the direction that we were going down. But as I'm trying to explain, and I will continue to explain as we go forward, this ultimately is a decision that I think is in the best interest of all of the members of the PGA Tour.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Jay Monahan trying to explain it, but mentions that the meeting with the players was heated on Tuesday as he was announcing the merger between the PGA and the LIV Tour, also the DP World Tour. What does this mean? Well, details are still sketchy. We don't have a lot of them, but if you missed our conversation with Matt Adams from Ireland, actually, he was called into work duty in Ireland on Tuesday with this bombshell news. I saw one golf analyst call it the most tumultuous day in the history of golf, which I thought was a strong statement. Maybe hyperbole, maybe not. But it certainly did turn the golf world upside down in large part because it was a huge surprise. Monahan has decided to take it, to take whatever comes his way. And Matt told us the bottom line is the bottom line. Ultimately, this is about money. And he says he believes that Monahan and a few others from the PGA Tour Policy Board who are in on this decision, along with the governor of the PIF, which is the investment fund where the Saudis spend so much of their money in sports, and Uber and other American companies. He said, ultimately, the bottom line is actually the bottom line. There is going to be an influx of cash. What did we hear from the Saudi governor? Whatever it takes to grow the game of golf, whatever it takes. But it was kept under wraps. A lot of the golfers were surprised, and there was a huge backlash and an emotional response, not just from golfers, but from sports fans. I actually had some of you tell me that you'll never watch golf again. Well, maybe. I don't know if I believe that. I think that it was a similar response when baseball went into a lockout at the beginning of the 22 season or 22 spring training. And what did we notice by middle of the year, by the postseason? There was no more mention of the lockout. It was absolutely a forgive and forget situation for baseball fans and sports fans. If you didn't already love baseball, well, then it was no big thing. But if you do love baseball, a month lockout that only delayed the season by a week, well, it wasn't so bad. How many sports fans are actually going to hold this against golf? Forever. Maybe you will for a while. And maybe you're one of those diehards. It's a little bit like the whole boycott the NFL thing a few years ago. They're for our entertainment. And if your morals or your ethics or your values run so contrary to the PGA Tour and the fact that it will be taking the Saudi money, then that's certainly your prerogative. But we know there's Saudi money everywhere. The Saudi Arabian government sells fuel, sells oil for fuel, gasoline, all over the world. The United States partners with the same Saudi government when it comes to powering our vehicles and other machinery that needs gas. And I do think it's humorous when Twitter gets moral or when Facebook gets moral. We tend to pick and choose. But if this is something that's important enough to you and you're never going to watch golf again, okay. I don't think that's the majority of sports fans, even if right now you're fired up. And I think that was the point for Matt. Matt was saying Monahan is willing to ride this out. The PGA Tour is willing to ride out the backlash so that they have the money they need to be able to expand golf courses, golf events, purses, and yeah, ultimately grow the game of golf through more initiatives. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. I actually heard some interesting theories on Wednesday about why this is happening now. There are some theories out there that through the discovery process of the lawsuits, and I remember there were multiple lawsuits out there that were accusing the PGA Tour of a monopoly and violating antitrust laws. And then there were also lawsuits against LIV. So there were multiple lawsuits, and they've been dropped as a result of this merger. There are some theories out there, and who knows if they'll ever be proven, that through the discovery process in advance of these lawsuits, it was determined, or it would have become public, that the PGA Tour was in dire straits financially and that they were losing money so badly that it would have been an embarrassment to them. And maybe, again, these are theories, maybe could have meant the end of the tour as we know it. Remember, they promised huge purses. They kind of created their own series within the series, if you will, with some of the top golfers in the world. Didn't they find somebody? It was Rory, actually, wasn't it? Rory got fined earlier this season, if I remember correctly, for missing an event that he was supposed to play at. Maybe it wasn't Rory. A top golfer got fined for missing an event. It was Rory. Okay, good. They set up all these new kind of series and stipulations and of course, larger purses. And the idea out there, the speculation out there, is that because of the extra money they were spending, they were spreading themselves too thin. And with the lawsuits, they would have been exposed. The PGA Tour would have been exposed for its lack of funds and its precarious financial position. I didn't hear the word bankruptcy. I didn't hear anything like that. But there is this idea that hastened the desire and the timing with Jay Monahan. All right, so maybe he thought he was protecting the PGA Tour. And the only reason to, or the only way to keep it afloat and to continue to grow it and grow the purses and grow the events and grow the courses and not only maintain status quo, but keep everyone happy was to sell out. was to sell out and take the money from a group that he blasted last year. So there are a lot of things that may change. In fact, these new rules that the PGA put in place for the top golfers in the world. Now, they were competing for a ton of money, but Rory got fined $3 million for missing a tournament in Hawaii and the RBC Heritage. So they had created kind of this new system with these ginormous purses. They didn't want to allow anyone who departed to the LIV Tour to participate in anything PGA. But of course, the PGA Championship, Augusta National, the Open, the RBC, not RBC, sorry, RSA, RSA. Too many acronyms in golf. Just a lot of different governing bodies of the sport. And so for that reason, golf was kind of pulled in a bunch of different directions, and maybe, just maybe, the PGA Tour was running on financial fumes. That's just a theory. I do not know if it's true. But if that's what Jay Monahan was trying to avoid, was all of this getting exposed in court documents, then that would be quite the incentive. Not to mention, he gets to keep his job for now. Rory McIlroy, he was thoughtful. He was open. He was frustrated. And he was resigned. You will hear from him. I would say, along with Tiger, just because Tiger is Tiger, Rory was the number one golfer that people wanted to hear from in the wake of this bombshell announcement about the PGA and LIV merger. So we'll get Rory McIlroy next. On Twitter, A-Law Radio. Lots of responses, of course. Also on our Facebook page. Oh, and if you didn't see the New York City skies looking orange, I'm not kidding, it's orange. I love orange. Orange is my favorite color, but not orange skies. Yeah, you need to check it out. I retweeted a video from the Weather Channel. It's not quite as cool as the whale video, but it's on my Twitter. Again, A-Law Radio. It literally takes 10 seconds. And then if you have a reaction to Rory, you can...
The finals are here, and the biggest assist is happening off the court. BetQL has the best sportsbook deals, bonus offers, and exclusive access to risk-free bets, giving you more bang for your basketball buck. Visit BetQL to unlock special offers and finish the season on a winning note. Whether you're riding with the Joker in Denver or playoff Jimmy in Miami, BetQL's bonus offers can be the alley to your sports betting oop. Go to BetQL.com/hoops to take advantage of these exclusive offers. That's BetQL.com/hoops.
Also call us 855-212-4227.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The memo today just said that there's going to be a combination of the LIV, PGA, and DP World Tours, that the PGA Tour will still have a majority stake on the policy board, but that Al Rumayyan will be on the board. You know, and that somehow there's some merging of the tours. They're going to try and keep some team component in professional golf, but try to get some of this the disruption and, you know, maybe some of the bitterness out of the professional game, which is probably a positive. But, you know, I think for all of us out here on the PGA Tour, we're really anxious to hear the details to see, you know, how it affects each and every player in the tour going forward.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Golfer Brendan Todd, who spoke on Tuesday in the wake of the explosive and heated, emotional meeting that Jay Monahan held with golfers in Toronto for the RBC Canadian Open. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. That was Golf Channel, by the way. Rory McIlroy made extensive comments as part of a press conference in Toronto on Wednesday. And I would say, if not the number one golfer that we wanted to hear from, he was at least in the top two. And his story, well, it starts with a phone call early in the morning.
I got a text message on Monday night, I guess, from Jimmy Dunn saying, hey, can I give you a call in the morning? So I said, sure. Jimmy rang me at about 6:30 yesterday morning. We had a chat. took me through the news, took me through the deal, the structure of the deal, what it meant for us, what it meant for the DP World Tour. So I learned about it pretty much at the same time everyone else did. It was a surprise.
I would say he had a little bit of a heads up. So is that considered a sign of respect that a member of the negotiating team for the PGA let him in on it before he found out on social media? Maybe. I guess that would precipitate the 6:30 a.m. Eastern time phone call. And then what, Rory? Your reaction?
I knew there had been discussions going on in the background. I knew that lines of communication had been opened up. I obviously didn't expect it to happen as quickly as it did. But I really think that, you know, from what I gathered, the tour felt they were in a real position of strength coming off the back of the DP World winning their legal case in London. It sort of weakened the other side's position, and they went in there, and you know, the way Jimmy described it, you know, Rory, sometimes you got 280 over water and you just got to go for it. And you know, that's what they did.
It was compared to a deep shot, right? A shot that may be a little bit risky, got to go over the water, got to go 280, but you just got to go for it. No laying up in the strategy between the PGA and PIF, the investment fund of the Saudis. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. I hear resignation from Rory.
When I try to remove myself from the situation and I look at the bigger picture and I look at 10 years down the line, you know, I think ultimately this is going to be, it's going to be good for the game of professional golf. I think it secures it unifies it and it secures its financial future. So, you know, there's mixed emotions in there as well, as there's going to be. I don't understand all the intricacies of what's going on. It's a very, what's the word? You know, there's a lot of ambiguity. There's a lot of things still to be sort of thrashed out. But at least it means that the litigation goes away, which has been a massive burden for everyone. That's involved with the tour and that's playing the tour. And we can start to work toward, you know, some sort of way of unifying the game at the elite level.
So you do hear golfers mention the litigation and the fact that there has been a fight going on, and at least that's a positive. But Rory says, if I take my personal feelings out of it, if I remove myself from the equation, well, then I understand that ultimately, because of the money, this is the best thing for the game of golf. And because the litigation goes away, this is, he doesn't call it smart, but he calls it the best option. But he refuses to back off his stance that LIV Golf is a cancer, that it was a bunch of fellow golfers who left for the money. He won't see it as anything else besides a negative for the game of golf. And as much as he understands that the money will be a positive, again, he feels resigned. It seems like there's resignation there. He understands where the fans are coming from, he says. He gets the disappointment, and he tees off on LIV again.
It's not LIV. I think that's the thing. I still hate LIV. Like, I hate LIV. Like, I hope it goes away, and I would fully expect that it does. And I think that's where the distinction here is. This is the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and the PIF. Very different from LIV. All I've tried to do is protect what the PGA Tour is and what the PGA Tour stands for, and I think it will continue to do that. So, look, going forward, I hope that there's, you know, there may be a team element, and you're going to see maybe me, maybe whoever else play in some sort of team golf, but I don't think it'll look anything like Liv has looked, and I think that's a good thing.
I hate Liv, he says. Like, I really hate Liv, and I hope it goes away. He feels like the golfers who departed, and we're talking about Phil Mickelson, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, who just won the Masters, Bryson DeChambeau, who was part of the mix at the Masters, Cam Smith, who won the Open last year. We're talking about some great golfers. And they all had varying reasons for leaving. But he believes those guys, that tour, is still something that he could never get on board with, number one. Number two, could never support. And he makes the distinction and wants everyone else to know this is not the PGA partnering with Liv. No, this is about the money. This is about the Saudi money. It's not about the Liv tour.
Whether you like it or not, the PIF are going to keep spending money in golf. At least the PGA Tour now controls how that money is spent. You know, so I'd, you know, if you're thinking about some, you know, one of the biggest sovereign wealth funds in the world, would you rather have them as a partner or, or an enemy? At the end of the day, money talks, and you'd rather have them as a partner.
Mm. At the end of the day, money talks. Matt Adams says the bottom line is the bottom line. But it's funny, though. He seriously draws a line between saying the PGA is partnering with Liv. No, no, it's the PGA partnering with the Saudi money. But, hey, you know what? Those guys got millions and millions and millions, in some cases hundreds of millions of dollars to leave for Liv. So, yeah, we should get that same money, too.
The simple answer is yes. The complex answer is how does that happen? Mm-hmm. Right? And that's all gray area and up in the air at the minute. But yeah, there's, you know, it's hard for me to not sit up here and feel somewhat like a sacrificial lamb and, you know, feeling like I've put myself out there and this is what happens. Again, removing myself from the situation, I see how this is better for the game of golf. There's no denying that. But for me as an individual, yeah, there's just going to have to be conversations that are had.
Hmm. He's resigned. He's definitely passionate. I think ultimately he never would have made the move and didn't think it was going to happen this fast. However, the money. Isn't that what it comes back to? The money. It is unfortunate. Now, I tried to see both sides of it, but it is unfortunate that the 9/11 families who were so upset about the Liv tour being founded by Saudi money and who were so upset that those players from the Liv Tour were allowed to participate in the U.S. Open. Was it the U.S. Open or PGA last year? No, it was the U.S. Open. U.S. Open. They were so upset about that. And Jay Monahan seemed to use them as a pawn. Talking about the moral high ground and do you ever have to apologize for being part of the PGA Tour? Yeah, somehow that all went away. Doesn't matter anymore. But Jay Monahan was asked that question as well. So we'll have a little more. Halfway through, thanks for joining us. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.